Earth's sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science interviews and great music from Austin, Texas. I'm Jorge Salazar. This week, 35 years later, NASA's Voyager mission keeps on trekking. And Skywatcher's delight of the moon near planets in the pre-dawn sky. Here's a scientist soundbite.
I think Voyager really has changed our view of the solar system, and it will be the first human-made object to leave the solar system and enter interstellar space, and then for billions of years orbit the center of our galaxy with all the stars.
That's Voyager chief scientist Ed Stone. More with him later, but first, science news of the week with Michael Brennan and Emily Howard.
According to new research published in the August 30th Journal of Nature, if Antarctica's ice sheets continue to thin as the climate warms, stores of the potent greenhouse gas methane could be released into the atmosphere. According to these researchers, there could be a similar amount of methane stored beneath Antarctica's vast ice sheets as there is trapped in the Arctic permafrost. Again, their work was published in the August 30th issue, Nature.
In the face of mounting evidence that cancer cells communicate, cooperate, and even engage in collective decision-making, biophysicists and cancer researchers at Rice University, Tel Aviv University, and Johns Hopkins University are suggesting a new strategy for outsmarting cancer through disrupting its network of communication. One researcher stated, "It's time to declare a cyber war on cancer." The article was published this week in the journal Trends in Microbiology.
NASA's WISE mission, an infrared space telescope launched to low Earth orbit in late 2009, announced on August 29th that it has found millions of possible supermassive black holes in space, along with about 1,000 dust-obscured galaxies with very high temperatures, which NASA has labeled as hot dogs, DOG for dust-obscured galaxies. The astronomers say these findings are helping them understand how galaxies and the supermassive black holes at their centers grow and evolve together.
The American Geophysical Union in Washington, D.C., released a story on August 31st suggesting the sun does have the capacity of disrupting electrical systems on Earth, not just at high latitudes near Earth's poles, but also at lower latitudes. The source of the potential disruption is solar flares, which are powerful releases of energy from the sun, and their subsequent coronal mass ejections, which are massive bursts of solar wind and magnetic fields released into space, and which sometimes head Earth's way. That's our news of the week. I'm Emily Howard.
And I'm Michael Brennan. Song of the Week is by The Sour Notes, off their recently remastered album, Last Looks, which is now out on vinyl. This song is called The Moment You Feel It.
To overcome present, let me know the moment you need it. If you're the cause of distance, let it show. The moment you feel it. The moment you feel it. The moment you feel it. If you want competition,
I'm not afraid to
the moment you feel it.
We're Earth Sky. We interview the world's top scientists. Billions of miles from Earth, the Voyager 1 spacecraft continues to explore our solar system. 2012 marks the 35th anniversary of the launch of NASA's Voyager 1, which has traveled farther than any man-made object, now thought to have escaped the bubble known as the heliosphere that envelops our solar system. On the phone now to talk about the Voyager mission is Ed Stone, chief scientist of Voyager. Dr. Stone, welcome.
Good to be with you.
It's been 35 years since Voyager 1 started its trek through our solar system. What do you feel is its most important accomplishment?
Well, its most important accomplishment is a continuing one of basically revealing what the solar system is really like and really changing our view of all the bodies in the solar system, as well as the interaction of our solar system with what's outside in interstellar space.
Okay, let's talk about that a little bit more. The world was a different place back in 1977 when Voyager 1 launched. How has this mission, the Voyager mission, changed how scientists look at and understand our solar neighborhood?
Well, I think one example is that when Voyager was launched, the only known active volcanoes were here on Earth. And then we flew by Io, a moon of Jupiter, and found 8 active volcanoes and 10 times more volcanic activity than the entire Earth. When Voyager was launched, the only known oceans were here on Earth, and Voyager revealed that Europa could well have an ocean beneath its icy crust. The only known nitrogen atmosphere was right here on Earth, and now we know that Titan has a very thick nitrogen atmosphere with liquid natural gas raining down on its surface. And here, before Voyager flew by the planets, we knew that magnetic fields were generated by the rotation of the planet, the poles. Magnetic and rotational poles were close together. Again, we found that Uranus and Neptune, the poles were closer to the equator than to the rotational axis. So time after time, we have discovered that our terracentric view, although well-informed, was in fact not nearly broad enough to capture the diversity of bodies in the solar system.
Now, the people listening may be familiar with a little bit familiar with Voyager, that it's out there exploring. But Dr. Stone, please tell us a little bit about what it does. What's a simple way to describe the scientific measurements that it's doing? What does Voyager do?
The sun is now creates a huge bubble around itself. The atmosphere expands away supersonically at nearly a million miles per hour, and that creates a huge bubble called the heliosphere. All the planets are inside this bubble. In fact, all the spacecraft currently are still inside, but Voyager 1 will be the first to leave the bubble and enter interstellar space, where it will be surrounded by winds that came from the explosion of supernovae nearby, rather than winds coming from our own sun.
So it's exploring the boundary of this bubble. Dr. Stone, describe for us a little bit about, for people listening who may not be familiar with what it actually does, what are some of the instruments on board? What is it measuring? What is it doing?
Well, Voyager has on it an instrument to measure the speed of the wind itself that comes from the sun, and we have another instrument which can measure the low-energy energetic particles, those which have been accelerated up to, say, a few percent the speed of light, and we have another instrument which measures the cosmic rays which are coming in from the outside, which are probably traveling at 50% or more the speed of light. We also measure the magnetic field, which, where we are now, has been carried out from the sun all the way out to 120 times as far from the sun as the Earth is, and it's still the magnetic field from the sun. And we also measure radio waves, which we know are generated in the interstellar space outside of the bubble.
I mean, I think this is amazing. I just want to touch on this point one more time, that, that this is technology that was developed in 1977. We barely had, we didn't have personal computers back then, I don't think. There weren't what we think of as today. The technology is just amazing what it's doing now.
It's quite remarkable. These were the first fully automatic spacecraft that could fly themselves. We have 3 computers on board which do that. Each computer, the memory for each computer is 12,000 bytes. not billions of bytes, but 12,000 bytes. That's how much memory each of our computers has. So, yes, these are very primitive computers by standards today, yet they were very advanced technology in the early 70s when the spacecraft was designed. These were the first fully automated spacecraft that could fly themselves.
Now, tell us about a technological artifact, I guess, on board Voyager, and that's what's called the Golden Record. What is that, and what went into putting that together? It's been described essentially as a message in an interstellar bottle.
Yes, it is. It's a message that we can actually send such a message. It really is that. I think that's the symbol, as it says. It makes a statement. Here's a culture which has had advanced to the point where it could send such a message. This is a grooved record, so it's now very old technology. And and it's a two-faced record, 16 2/3 RPM. It has on it many languages of Earth, greetings in many languages, music from very different cultures on Earth. It has sounds of Earth. It has images of over 100 images of Earth, life on Earth. So in that sense, it's a time capsule of Earth as it was when the mission message was sent deep into space, never to return to the solar system.
And Dr. Stone, of these Voyager missions, there's Voyager 1, there's Voyager 2. They are still going. They're still out there exploring. Tell us what's happening with the Voyager mission today.
Well, we are looking at with Voyager 1, we're clearly looking every day at the data to see if, in fact, we have left the bubble and entered interstellar space. What's happened in the last month is that some of these lower energetic particles, which are created inside the heliosphere and are trying to get out, have been very steady in their intensity for the last 7 years. And a month ago, they dropped half. And then they recovered, and then a few weeks later, they dropped to 1/3 of their previous value. And now they have dropped to only less than 10% of what they were. So the particles inside are leaking out, obviously. And at the same time, we find that the galactic cosmic rays, which are outside trying to get in, have gone up about 10% during the same time period. So they're the highest we have ever seen. So we're clearly entering a new region. We're still inside the heliosphere. And I can't tell you how much longer it will be, but it's clear we are progressively moving closer and closer to interstellar space.
Yeah, I think we're talking about billions of miles away. Is that right?
Yes, Voyager 1 is 11 billion miles from Earth, from the sun. So, yes, it's billions and billions. And we travel, the spacecraft travel a billion additional miles every 3 years.
Dr. Stone, thank you so much for taking this time out. What's the most important thing you want people today to know about the Voyager mission?
I think Voyager really has changed our view of the solar system, and it will be the first human-made object to leave the solar system and enter interstellar space, and then for billions of years orbit the center of our galaxy with all the stars.
You've been listening to Ed Stone, Chief Scientist of NASA's Voyager mission and a professor of physics at Caltech. We're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. Find us as Earth Sky on Facebook, Earth Sky Science on Twitter, and at earthsky.org. Deborah Bird joined us now with news of the global night sky, the moon near planets for early morning sky watchers. Welcome, Deborah.
So, Jorge, set your alarm. I know that's not your favorite thing to do.
Okay.
And the reason we're talking about the pre-dawn sky is that the moon is back in the pre-dawn sky, and the moon is so great for letting you identify objects in the sky. And this show that we're on right this moment is being released on September 8th. And on the morning of September 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th even, there's a great pre-dawn sky scene that'll let you identify two planets in the morning sky.
So what are we looking for?
So it's really easy to find these planets. They're the two brightest planets, Venus and Jupiter. And if Jupiter is a little bit higher in the sky than Venus. They were really close together for quite a while in Northern Hemisphere summer, which has now ended. Jupiter has now separated away from Venus and is moving away from Venus on the sky's dome. The coolest time, I think, to see them, if you're going to just pick a couple of days, if you don't have a clear view to the east on all those days and you just want to pick a couple of days, a really cool time to see them would be September 10th in the morning before sunrise. Look east and you'll see Jupiter higher in the sky than the crescent moon, and you'll see Venus lower in the sky than the crescent moon, and the moon will be about midway between Venus and Jupiter. So that's going to be like a cool thing to look at because they're going to make a line in the morning sky.
That's awesome. Yeah, Venus is known as the morning star, and now we have Jupiter kind of entering the scene there. Can anyone on the planet look for this or get, people, our program is broadcast worldwide. So, who can see this?
Yes, anyone can see it from any part of Earth. And the cool thing about it is that, as I said, they're going to make a line in the pre-dawn sky. That line is happening because the plane of the solar system is flat. And you know how we all see those pictures in our school textbooks from third grade or fourth grade where the planets are orbiting around the sun and they're orbiting in this flat plane. Well, that's actual reality. And when you look out in the sky, you see the planets orbiting more or less in this flat plane. But you're looking at it in two dimensions on the sky's dome. So what you see is, in the case of Venus, Jupiter, and the moon, you see a line. They're all making a line across the sky. And in the northern hemisphere where we are, Jorge, that line is going to be oriented in one way with respect to the horizon. You'll still see the same thing from the southern hemisphere, but that line that the planets and moon make will be oriented differently with respect to the horizon. And that's the only difference between the northern and southern hemisphere views. And of course, there's differences in terms of time zones around the world too, but pretty much we're all going to see the same thing. There's really more similarities than differences in the sky between the northern and southern hemisphere. People always accentuate the differences, but I like to accentuate the similarities.
And it's always great to see Venus. Venus is easy to find. It's one of the brightest things out there in the night sky. And Jupiter will be near it as well. That's also a treat to find. Is this a good time to see these planets?
It is. And as I said, there's some particular dates coming up this week that are especially good. And I mentioned September 10th is when the moon will be right between Venus and Jupiter, especially as seen from North America. And I'm talking about the North American view now. But it'll be the same from all over the globe, maybe not as precisely as in North America, but pretty precisely. Another great time to look, as seen from around the globe, will be the morning of September 12th. And on that morning, the moon is going to be closest to Venus. So from North America, they're going to be really close, and that's going to be really a cool thing to see as well. So any of these mornings are a good time to look. If you can look on all of the mornings, that would be super cool. If you can only pick one morning, well, you have to decide if you want to see the moon between Venus and Jupiter on September 10th or the moon right next to Venus on September 12th. But there's more to see as well.
And what's that?
Well, it's the constellation Orion, which is the constellation that many people know and can identify in the northern winter sky or southern summer sky. And the reason this constellation is so easy to identify is that it's a big constellation. It contains a couple of bright stars, couple of the brightest stars in the sky. In the middle of this constellation, there's a short, straight row of three medium bright stars. And those three medium bright stars in that little row on the sky are really easy to pick out. Like if you went outside before dawn and tried to pick out anything among the stars, well, of course, you'd notice Venus and Jupiter and the moon because they're so bright. But right next to Venus and Jupiter and the moon, you're going to see this little short straight row of three medium bright stars, and that's the belt of Orion. So those stars around that little row of stars are the constellation Orion. And the cool thing about the belt of Orion is that it points in two directions to other bright stars that you can also find in the morning sky now.
And What are those two stars? I mean, I know one of them for sure. It's one of the brightest stars out there. But yeah, tell us about these two stars.
Well, so Orion's Belt, this little short straight row of three medium bright stars now in the pre-dawn sky, points in one direction toward the star Aldebaran, which is the eye of the bull in the constellation Taurus. And in the other direction, it points toward the star Sirius, which is the brightest star in the sky. Sirius won't look so bright because it's pretty close to Venus and Jupiter right now, which are actually brighter. But if you could move Venus and Jupiter and the moon out of the way in the coming week, you would see that Sirius is indeed the brightest star in the sky. And it's really interesting to contrast Sirius, this very bright star, with Venus and Jupiter. Of course, Venus and Jupiter are planets, and so they shine with a steady light, whereas Sirius is going to be twinkling like crazy, especially since it's pretty low in the sky right now before dawn. So people are already writing to us and saying, what is that really bright twinkling thing in the sky? And usually at this time of year, that's the star Sirius.
That's awesome. So these are things that that early morning sky watchers can find, some really beautiful objects out there.
That's right. Look in the east before dawn, the general direction of the sunrise, and about an hour before the sun comes up.
Thanks, Deborah.
Thank you, Jorge.
Earth Sky's Deborah Bird, and we're Earth Sky, a clear voice for science. And that's our show. Thank you for joining us. This week's show was recorded at the Earth Sky Studios in Austin, Texas, the live music capital of the world. Our producer is Michael Brennan. Executive producers are Peter Zandan, Ryan Britton, and Deborah Bird. Special thanks this week to our musical contributors. For more information on the science and the music you heard this week, visit our website at earthsky.org. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
There are too many artists, too much art, and not enough genius, I believe. Science is the art of the next age. There are so many artists, too much hype, and not enough reason, I'm afraid. Silence is the song of the next age.